fans, wherever you may be, welcome inside the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Join your host, Bill Alvstead, and featuring Seahawks sports writer and football analyst, Keith Myers.
Hey, Hawks fans, welcome back to another edition of the Hawks Playbook Podcast, episode number 127. We're getting up there, Keith. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's just another lovely summer day up here in the Pacific Northwest. We've got that weather. I know you're familiar with it, where it's all cloudy and gray in the morning, but it burns off in the early afternoon and turns out, you know, in the high 70s or low 80s. It's like just absolutely perfect summer weather up here. So
yeah, it was rather warm earlier in the week, and it got a little monsoon came through and cooled it down. It was 115 degrees. Which is too hot, Keith. I didn't go out much, but luckily, just before my son had a practice, a monsoon thing came through and literally knocked the temperature down 12 degrees. So it was still 103, but that's way, way better. That felt like the air conditioning was on compared to 115. The bad news was my kid, love him, adore him, Logan, ended up getting a concussion in practice. So that was sucky. So we didn't end up having to go to the hospital, but we brought him home. He was coherent and all that kind of stuff. Banged his head pretty good. Ended up going to the doctor, though, yesterday. Got the confirmation that it was a concussion. He's got to go through concussion protocol. So he's a little foggy. He's got a little headache. He had a note, so he had to take it to school. And good news for him is he gets out a couple of early tests that they've got. They're actually in school now, believe it or not. Northwesterners are kind of going, what? It's only the 6th or 7th of August, whatever it is. But he's back at it already. And so he's got to take it easy for a couple of weeks. So he's out of football practice for at least a week. He's got to be reevaluated by a specialist next week this time. He's got to get completely medically cleared before he can step back out on the football field. So he's not happy about that, but I'm not happy either. And I don't know what to think, Keith, because it's one of those deals. As a dad, you got a concussion. It's a second concussion. Ooh. And so I don't know how I feel about him continuing to play. So it's kind of crazy when it's in your own home. These, you know, guys in football you watch all the time. Oh, he's got a concussion. No big deal. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And we need to treat it like a big deal. That's actually, the fact that it's the second one is, to me, that resonates as being more significant.
Yeah, and it wasn't as bad as the first one. The first one came last fall, actually. And it was in basketball. He banged heads with somebody and knocked him out for a couple seconds. This one was a lighter hit, but nonetheless, the effects are similar. So, which is terrifying to me because, you know, now he's susceptible to it. And, you know, anytime in football, that can happen at any play. You just don't know, you know. And so What are you going to do?
Yeah, just that's scary. I'm glad my sons are young enough. I haven't had to address that yet, but I know.
Yeah, I thought we'd keep him out of football, you know, until eighth grade. So he's in eighth grade, and I thought, well, this would be the time to kind of get him into the physical nature of tackle football, and he's kind of mentally, physically ready, and not so much. So, so here we are, Keith, week two of training camp. Training camp literally only has a few days left, you know, five or six practices and they're wrapped up. I think
I believe there's three more practices.
And then a walkthrough and then the next game and then they break camp.
Yeah, that's it. So, it's kind of crazy, but training camp's almost over. We are in the
It's game day for the Seahawks. We're going into the Denver Broncos. We're playing the first game. It's crazy. We've got a ton of news since we recorded last week. We had the mock game last Saturday. We've got a little bit of information to talk about that. Of course, all the other practices, we've got you know, injury news, injury updates, player updates, transactions that happened. We're going to, you know, talk about the Denver Broncos for like 30 seconds because it's just a preseason game. It's kind of meaningless, but it's going to be awesome to see finally our guys participate in the game at full speed, even though it's probably going to end up being a lot of backups playing, Keith.
Well, yeah, I mean, Russell Wilson is out, not for injury, just they know he's good and they, you know, all of that's not a thing and they just don't want him to get hurt. He's too valuable. So he's not going to play. Geno Smith is going to get the start, which to me says that the backup quarterback battle is over. Geno Smith has been the number two guy pretty much from day one of camp. He is going to get the start this week. He got all the reps with the ones a couple of days ago when Wilson missed practice to go, sadly, to his grandfather's funeral. And Smith ended up getting all the reps with the first team offense at that point. And he was the one who was getting the second team reps in the mock game. So he was the backup, not the third stringer, in the mock game. So I think that you put all those things together and you have that Geno Smith is clearly in the lead as far as that camp competition goes.
And Paxton Lynch is going to pick up probably the second half in that game, mm-hmm. Against the Broncos. And I've heard a couple good things about Paxton Lynch, a couple good throws in camp, but more or less it's been the misses that I've been hearing about. And Geno Smith seems to have it put together more or less. And so it'll be, I don't even know if I'm looking forward to that, actually. It's just going to be a bunch of bad football in my mind. Now, maybe it'll be interesting and fun to watch. And I hope Geno Smith's on his game and gives our receivers a chance to catch the ball, because there's a lot of guys I'd like to be able to see. I'd like to see them move the offense so that we can sustain some drive and get some reps for some of our guys. That's really what the game's all about. Why don't we go through kind of some of the injury stuff, because there's a lot of it, Keith. Let's start with Bobby Wagner. He had like a minor medical procedure, quote unquote, on his knee. I think we all know that was probably, you know, the injection thing that some of the guys have been getting the last two or three years. But he's going to take it easy for at least a week. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if they keep Bobby Wagner out until maybe the third game, give him a series or two and call it good.
Yeah, that's my expectation. Part of this is, this isn't anything new. He played with whatever is going on with the knee. It's not like according to him, he doesn't feel a lot of pain. It's just always stiff and annoying. And so it just is what it is. And it's part of being an athlete and playing at the high level he has. And so they're just basically using this they're going, hey, if we can make it feel at least a little bit better during the season, that'll be good. And if not, we don't get our newly signed, very high-priced defender hurt during the preseason.
And there's going to be a lot of that. Another one, a big one, actually, Ed Dixon. Didn't really hear about Ed Dixon having any problems up until about 4 or 5 days ago, and all of a sudden he's got this knee. Team evaluated him to find out if he needed surgery. Well, it turns out he did. He ended up having surgery on Tuesday to do some minor work on his knee. He's out 4 to 5 weeks. That puts him after the start of the season and possibly in jeopardy, depending on camp cuts the last week of camp. He's got a cap number that puts him out there a little ways. It's non-guaranteed, like $3.5 million or something like that, Keith. What do you think about that, and how does that affect that tight end room, considering Will Disley's not going to go on Thursday? They're going to hold him back another week. You've got Hollister nursing a groin. He's out. Mm-hmm. And then they've got a couple of new guys they brought in.
Yeah. So it's really hard for me to tell, because what you end up with in there is they believe that Disley's going to be full strength well before the beginning of the season, like probably by week 3. He'll be out there with the starters. You've still got Nick Vinette, who's been you know, with the team for a while, and he's kind of the jack of all trades guy. And then it kind of comes down to, you know, Hollister or one of the new guys. If somebody steps up and says, I can handle the being the third tight end, they may choose to let Dixon go. What they lose.
Yeah, I don't think it's currently on the roster.
What they lose is all that veteran presence and leadership. And that's what part of the reason why they brought him in was they just really wanted a hardworking, high work ethic veteran, you know, to replace the Jimmy Graham situation, you know, as the leader in the room. And so I don't know if they're going to in any way want to lose that. And so, but then they have to ask themselves,
I get it.
Is it worth $3.5 million of cap room?
So this last week also, they made a couple of moves in the tight end room. Justin Johnson, who'd had a little injury, they cut him with an injury designation. And then Tyrone Swoops was also cut. I know it's a favorite of the show. We've talked about him a few times. Just didn't seem like he ever caught on, and he's no longer with the team. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if they bring him back. He's kind of one of those guys that's off the roster yet, sitting out there if they need him. And then they picked up a couple of guys, Jackson Harris, tight end out of the University of Georgia, almost 6'5", 251, 33 1/4 arms. He's known for his pass catching ability, although he didn't have many catches in college. He's a better catcher than he is a blocker. And then a guy by the name of Wes Saxton, 26 years old. He's been around a little bit, 6'4", 240. A little faster, more of a pass catcher again than a blocker. So, what are they trying to do there with those two guys? Where they're not so much blockers as they are pass catchers.
I think they were looking for bodies at the position who could fill in because they're just limited. They just needed guys so they can get reps. And so, I think that is part of it. Although, when I did look at those two guys and their profiles and that they're known for their work in the passing game, it did make me wonder a little bit of what that means about Hollister, because to me that sounds like they needed, if Hollister is going to miss a week of practice, they don't want to lose a week of, you know, everyone else getting practice around that portion of the passing game, because they plan on using him in the passing game. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they went the pass catcher route.
I did too. And just to mention too, we didn't mention it, but Hollister does have a groin issue. He's out for the Thursday game, but it shouldn't be a long-term situation with her, although he does have some injury history. Mm-hmm. So just something to watch. George Fant's playing. So we've got, for the game, we've got Nick Vinette, George Fant, Jackson Harris and Wes Saxton. So a couple of newbies, guys that probably aren't going to do much, you know, to be completely honest. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to expect from that group in this particular game.
Well, and Fant is also going to be playing left tackle for most of the, or a good portion of the game, because they're not going to have Brown out there long. I mean, he's a veteran Pro Bowl level player. He'll go out there for the first couple series and then go off, and the currently the backup left tackle is George Fant, so he will come on at that point and play until, you know, his turn is up, and then they'll bring in someone else. But that is, so he's not going to be available at tight end for most of the game.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting and a little ugly. I mean, you're going to have Fant over there at left tackle, Posick's already inserted into left guard. We'll see how many snaps Britt gets at center. After that, it's probably Joey Hunt, a little undersized in the center. Then you've got on the right side, you're going to probably have Jordan Simmons a little bit, and Jamarco Jones on the edge. And from what I've heard, Jamarco Jones has been struggling a little bit, especially against like Barkevious Mingo in practice as an edge rusher. The line could struggle a little bit in this game. I mean, just, you know, it's. I hate to even call it a game. It's like a glorified practice, but you're still looking at full speed. You're still looking at guys trying to make a roster, and so it is important.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to the players. Like, the end result doesn't matter. Like, who cares if who wins or how many, you know, by how many points? That does, none of that matters. What matters is how individual players play and whether they can stay healthy and make plays and prove they belong. I mean, that's what it's mostly about. And a little bit, it's about like the first team offense and defense getting some work in together at full speed. And, you know, just getting more comfortable there. But yeah, these games, you're right. It's hard to call them games at times because when the result doesn't matter at all, then, you know, it's like, why even have the competition? But, you know, they're out there. And so the line I don't expect great things from, although one of the things that's come out is with Ethan Posick getting all of these reps at left guard, he has stepped up so far and shown that he has improved from last year, that he is done. He's mastered some of the little technical things they wanted him to get. He's doing a better job of understanding leverage and where his hands need to be. And, you know, inside, outside, shoulder, and all of that. He's getting himself in place better. Just getting a lot of praise both from, you know, Pete Carroll, but also from Justin Britt, the guy next to him, who's just talking about how much better he is this year versus last year in terms of all those things. So I'm actually very intrigued to see how he does at left guard.
Yeah, well, fair enough. But just to point out, though, I had mentioned Simmons earlier that he would get some reps. He's out for this game. I just wanted to make that clear. Also, mm-hmm. I got a clarification, too, on Phil Haynes. We'd been talking about Phil Haynes as a guy that was going to come in and maybe compete, and then we didn't see him. He went on the PUP list. I found out why. He had a sports hernia surgery a couple weeks ago. Nobody clarified that. Nobody said anything, at least to my knowledge. Found out today that he had a sports hernia, and he's actually back running and trying to build up his strength again. Something like that's probably like a 6-week type deal. So not exactly sure the date for his injury, but he could possibly be ready for the first game if they felt like he was going to be a long-term roster choice for the Hawks. I would hate to see him be shut down for the year over something that he was ready to start the season with almost. What are your thoughts on that? Considering like a numbers game, stashing a guy like Phil Haynes versus having him on the roster.
Well, the problem is that he's going to miss all this time for injury. And unless he gets cleared and can at least practice a full day of practice, not on the injury report, they won't be able to waive him without an injury designation, which means if he doesn't get claimed, he ends up automatically on injured reserve and therefore is essentially done for the year. They'd have to cut him and then wait most of the season.
Oh, he'd get claimed though, don't you think?
I think so. I do, but I'm just saying like that they can't, he's not a guy that's going to be stashed on the practice squad,
I wasn't situation. Talking about stashing him on the practice squad. I was talking about designating him as injured reserve, shut down for the year. Same thing we did with Jamarco Jones last year, that type of a thing.
I'd hate to see that for something that he's going to be healthy about week one, maybe week two, and then still have most of the season. To me, it comes down to depth. If they're sitting there with Lupati, you know, still hurt and Simmons still banged up, and so you're going in to the season with your two starters and maybe Roos as the only backup, then you start to think and you're like, okay, well, we can't have a guy here who's also hurt. And so then they start looking at it becomes a numbers game. But if they choose not to keep Lupati around and instead keep another body that's healthy and ready to play, then they have the depth they get to give Hayes a week or two to finish getting healthy. And so they'll play the numbers games, and it kind of comes down to how many people are healthy, how many guards do they have, and can they afford to have it, you know, him on the roster for a couple of weeks, even if he's not going to be available.
Now, at the time that Upati went out with the minor foot, quote unquote, minor foot injury, it sounded like he was only going to miss like 3 or 4 days of practice. He's still out. He's not going to play in this game. That's a concern to me, just, you know, kind of a long-term deal. I don't know if they're holding him out as just a major precaution, like they want him to be 100% before he comes back, or What do you think about him playing through like nagging injuries and all that stuff? Is that a big concern?
He is a guy that hasn't played much in the last 2 years, 11 games over two seasons. And, you know, if he is going to be, if this is going to be an issue again, like, I'm concerned. The only thing that has me less concerned isn't him. It's the depth behind him. Posick has been much better than anticipated, and that's been a good sign. And we know that there's depth even behind that with Simmons and Hayes and that group, provided those guys get healthy. So I'm not as concerned overall about the thing, but at this point, do you trust him to play more than like four games this year if they keep him around? I don't.
Jeez, I don't know. I mean, do you keep a guy like, I mean, they guaranteed his full salary. I just don't know. I mean, you're taking up a roster spot of a guy that's not going to give you anything, which sucks. But at the same time, he could give you 12 games, you know? And so I guess they're sitting him out just to get him ready for the season. You know, he probably won't play much in the preseason, and it's just going to be one of those things where he's just going to have to line up and be ready to go day one, and we'll see how long he lasts. I mean, it's kind of a sucky situation, but that's, you know, I guess that's why you would keep a guy like Phil Haynes on the roster and make it through a couple of weeks, you know, where he's not quite ready. You don't dress him or whatever, but he's on the roster. Couple more injuries. I mean, they're just kind of all over the board because there's a lot of guys with nicks and cuts and scrapes and guys sitting out for various reasons. DeMarcus Christmas is out. Apparently, he's had back issues and he's had epidurals to put that inject some cortisone in there to help him out. I've got experience with that. I know exactly what that's like. So he's kind of out for the Thursday game. Procise is out. Procise has got some sort of hip thing going on now. Homer's out. Leno Hill's still recovering, although he's close. He'll be back for the second game. Disley, yeah, their precaution. They're going to go
with
ahead.
Delano Hill, what they said is he's not going to play in this game, but he'll be available and be out there at next practice after the game. So he is out, you know, going to be fully back at that point.
Yeah.
And the other good
piece, and that'll help the safety room for sure.
Marquise Blair is also back, and he should play in this game. So
yeah, for sure. Disley, like I said, a precaution. Hollister's not going to suit up. Christmas is out, like I said. Haynes is just getting back. Ed Dixon had the surgery. Collier got out of his boot, I read, today. It was the first day out of his boot. So he's walking around. He's, you know, he's participating in at least being at practice and going through some drills and walkthrough type situations. So Collier is an interesting situation because we just didn't know with him. The last time we spoke, we didn't really have a firm diagnosis, Keith. Since then, Pete Carroll's come out and said it's a unique sprain. They'd never seen it before. He didn't really give a complete diagnosis and prognosis as far as how long he'd be out. Come to find out, it's going to be much less than they originally thought, and he could be just out another week after this, could return in the third game, or at least be ready for the first game of the season, which is good news, considering the depth issues that the defensive end position has right now. Also, Ziggy Ansah. Ziggy's looks like he's definitely on the go for being ready in the first game. I don't know if they're going to work him into the preseason or not. I would think that they'd want to give him a handful of reps, but it sounds like he's ready to go too. So that's good news on the defensive end front. Bobby Wagner had a procedure on his knee. He's out for at least a week, if not more. We talked about that. They're holding Wilson out. Simmons is out. That's like a list that I have. I think that's most of the guys, but there could be a few others. That's quite a few out of a 90-man roster. The good news is a lot of guys are going to get an opportunity in this game, Keith, to show out for the first time that we're going to be able to see them. Cody Barton's out too, by the way. Why don't you kind of go through some stuff that you've seen this last week, including the mock game that they had Saturday, guys that you think have kind of shown out a little bit that you'd like to, you know, maybe throw out there for a discussion or talk about a little bit, or position groups that you think you're kind of excited to see this next week?
Yeah. So, okay. So I should probably start by saying that long list of injuries sounds really bad, but the Seahawks under Pete Carroll are super conservative when it comes to players and whatever. If they have like the slightest bit of soreness or whatever, he sits him for a day. And so that's kind of what we're seeing is them just playing it super safe with everybody and trying to make sure that everyone is healthy and they're ready to go for week one, because that's all that really matters. So they're going to be doing that. And as far as the players who are playing, the ones that are, and the things that I've seen, put those two together, the thing that stood out to me a lot, and from what I've seen, is how much they're using the running backs in the passing game, not just as blitz pickup blockers, but routes out of the backfield, motioning into the slot, and actually getting the ball to them. They're not just, you know, just out there to be a body and occupy a linebacker. They're trying to get the ball into the hands of their playmakers, being Penny and Carson, without just running the ball. So they're basically having these like short passes that are like long handoffs and that kind of stuff, trying to get touches to their playmakers and not have to run the ball
out in space
to do it. Yeah.
Right. And I heard Chris Carson has got some of the best hands on the team, and they're going to really try to feature him more in that the running back passing game this year. So where he basically doesn't have to come off the field. Now I know Rashad Penny's going to get some touches too, but it really kind of throws into that third running back touches. If Carson and Penny are going to get like 99% of the load, it'll be pretty interesting to see who emerges as that third and fourth back for the team.
Yeah, I mean, Chris
Carson. Do they want a designated third? Do they want a designated third down specialist, or are they focused on kind of having another bell cow type guy on the roster in addition to Penny and Carson, because they're going to get such a heavy workload? You know what I'm saying? I mean, does that favor a guy like Bo Scarborough, for example?
It might.
Who, by the way, is going to get a ton of touches this game, you know, just based on the fact that Homer and McKissick and Procise are all out. Yep, and Carson and Penny are probably only going to get a dozen touches, you know, between them.
Yeah, I don't expect to see Carson much. I do expect to see Penny a little bit, just because they still want him to continue working on reading his blocks and showing, you know, his getting that burst to get through the hole and that kind of stuff. So I kind of expect to see more of Penny, very little of Carson in this game. But to your point of Carson having great hands, he's always had great hands. The problem is that has always been that when they get him out there in a passing situation, teams would be like, okay, let's blitz and let's send that fifth guy, knowing that Wilson would check to keep Carson in the backfield. And Carson was terrible at pass blocking. Like, he just was not good at it at all. And that is where we need to see improvement. That's where we need to see him develop, because teams all just have these automatic checks based on personnel and trying to take advantage of that particular weakness. Penny, on the other hand, is a much better pass blocker. He's, you know, not on the upper echelon as far as running backs who block, but he is significantly better than Carson. So he actually has, I think, that edge to be the third down guy if Carson's getting most of the first and second down carries. And because of that, you end up with, well, as you said, like, do they need a guy like Procise or Homer? Or McKissick? I don't know. They seem to want one because they have three guys like that on the roster. But
yeah,
if you start looking numbers and you start trying to go through and figure it out, it could very easily be where they decide, you know, if Penny's going to be our third down back and do all those things, then let's keep around a guy that can back up Carson in the first and second down role. And then a guy like Bo Scarborough does become more interesting. Now, Scarborough is not one of the guys that I would say has been doing great. He has shown a little bit, like, that he's been around and is starting to really grasp the offense and the blocking and all of that. But he had a play the other day where he got ran down on a long run. He got ran down from behind by a defensive tackle, and they knocked the ball out for a fumble.
Jamie Meter.
Yeah. So you have
and he's 365 pounds.
Yeah.
A guy that ran Bo Scarborough down 40 yards downfield.
Yeah. And he caught Bo Scarborough, a 360 pounder caught a running back from behind and forced a fumble. That is not a good look for the running back at all.
The good news is Bo was 40 yards downfield. The bad news is he got caught by a big guy. I can't attribute this to anybody, and I apologize, but I heard either from Schottenheimer or from Carroll that Travis Homer actually had the ability to run between the tackles, and they weren't afraid to use him in that type of role, although he is being more featured as a third down type guy. That was an interesting little tidbit to me, because that told me that maybe he would be kind of have an inside track to that third back. Mm-hmm. And then Procise has that ability too, but we all know Procise is made of glass. In fact, he's out again with a hip thing. So it seems like Travis Homer or JD McKissic doesn't have that ability day in, day out.
He doesn't.
Now, he could do it for you in a pinch for one game, but Travis Homer having that ability would be interesting.
Yeah, McKissic's not a guy that's going to run between the tackles. He's a guy who can run the ball on the outside. He can catch the ball to the backfield. He can line up at slot. He can return punts and kicks. He does a little bit of everything. He's very dynamic and as an athlete and just really electric. But you run him between the tackles, he's going to last about four plays, and he's just absolutely tiny. But I do like Travis Homer. I think he can run between the tackles. He's a little small compared to what the Seahawks typically do at that spot, because they want guys that can break tackles and fight through contact and that kind of stuff, and they find that bigger guys are a little better at that. But in a pinch, you know, in where you need a backup, he can handle that, and I think he can handle it significantly better than Procise or McKissic can. Which gives him that, I think it just gives him an edge on top of being a good like third down pass play option in that actual role. So to me, he would have the inside track to that job. He's just got to actually get healthy and show it on the field.
Right. Well, and he's a special teams or team guy too. So that really helps him. Mm-hmm. Any other group or any other player you want to bring up? From like the scrimmage or the last week's practice really standing out?
So we had we've had all this stuff going on at linebacker where Kendricks sat out a day, Bobby Wagner is out now for a week, and so you ended up with starters who were Calitro and KJ Wright
and Nick Belore.
And then actually one of the guys that ended up playing was fullback Nick Belore. And the reason why that was people are like, what? They're running, lining up their fullback. Well, he was a linebacker who turned into a fullback because that's what his teams needed. And it turned out he was good at making those hits and the blocks and all that kind of stuff. So he's kind of stayed there, but he was a linebacker for the first few years of his career and in college. So it isn't completely out of whack. They just needed bodies because so many people were out and getting him in there in that mix helped. Then they went out and said, okay, we got to fix this. And they cut a wide receiver and brought in Worley to be, another guy. He's actually an interesting player to me. His likelihood of making the team is very small, given the depth and everything, but I still think he's interesting, and I hope the team can find a way to fit him onto the practice squad.
He was interesting when he played at Ohio State, but he went undrafted. So he was at Ohio State, had a lot of production, starter mm-hmm. for like 24 games for Ohio State, was in a bowl game. He's got great experience. It was a team captain guy, right? 6'1", 238. And Cincinnati picked him up. He was cut though after a full year on their roster, and Seattle kind of brought him in. He can play the run really well, but he really sucks in coverage. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I'm gathering, reading about him in his time at Cincinnati.
That is his reputation.
So it is, yeah. So, you know, right now it's a camp body, but let's see. He may get some playing time because Cody Barton's out. They're probably not going to play while Bobby Wagner's out. KJ Wright's probably going to get limited snaps. Kendricks is probably good for a half, maybe at the most. And then everyone else is going to kind of fill in. And in that, you know, Barcavius Mingo has kind of switched from the strong side to an edge rusher primarily. And Shaquem Griffin, kind of the same thing. So we'll see where he's at. And then you've got Ben Burkervin, you know, Jacob Martin's in that room as well, but he's more of an edge guy. So to me, that after the main guys are all sitting, you know, the Bartons, the Kendricks, Wright, Wagner, you're down to Calitro and a couple of guys they just brought off the street. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, Calitro is going to play a lot in this game. Like, he may play three quarters before being lifted at middle linebacker. I mean, he is going to play a lot.
And he's a stat filler. I mean, he's a stat. He's a guy that makes plays. He just makes plays like 2 or 3 yards past the line of scrimmage more. He doesn't fill gaps as well because he's not a physical guy. Mm-hmm. So he's playing lanes, and his depth is such where he's kind of in that second level a lot. And there's a lot of tackles to be made in that area. And he does a good job diagnosing from that area. But as far as guy stepping up into holes and fighting off defensive tackles and stuff, that's not him.
No. And that's one of the things that always frustrated me when I was writing about this team is people would look at tackle numbers and like, oh, well, this guy's got, you know, 44 tackles and not all tackles are created equal, right? Are you making that tackle at the line of scrimmage or within 1 yard? Or are you sitting back 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage and waiting for the running back to come to you? You know, so that's why just pure tackle totals never really meant anything to me. And you end up in a situation here where this team has to look at Calitro, who does actually put up good production, but from what I saw last year and watching the tape, he didn't attack the line of scrimmage and get upfield. So yes, he made plays, but he made them, and the team's got an extra yard or two.
Right. Well, there's a reason why we were gashed, you know, last year in as a running defense.
Yeah, because we were missing guys. But, you know, that's
right. That's true.
That really comes down to.
You know, I got to give it to Calitro. He hung around the roster. He made the roster as an undrafted guy last year. Let's see if he takes that second year step. I mean, I'm not going to write him off. There's just a limited amount of opportunity for him. When you got guys like Cody Barton drafted in the third round, and Ben Burkervin is the, you know, Pac-12 defensive player of the year damn near because he had 176 tackles. Lou. Yeah, I mean, how about the wide receivers, Keith? What do you think of the wide receivers this last week?
So it was weird because like Metcalf was out, but then he came back and he just finds a way every time he's out there for practice of making some spectacular play and making sure everybody knows he's there. And not doing it in a Terrell Owens, you know, drama way, but just with his play on the field. And you cannot miss him if you go to a practice because he will make some sort of play to remind you that he's out there. And
I'm glad it's you this week and not me.
but do you disagree? I mean, he just has a knack for just, and the thing is, it's not like he's out there dominating the way Doug Baldwin used to during these practices where he was just uncoverable and everyone right. was just...
pops with big plays.
Yeah, nobody wanted to cover Baldwin in practice because, well, I mean, like...
Nobody can cover Metcalf. I mean, you guys got guys like Griffin getting beat, you know, mm-hmm. 2-3 yard separation, you know, over the top. He's getting beat over the top against Metcalf. Guys like Trey Flowers, even though Trey Flowers is playing a man up, like in his face, all the way with him down the line, down the sideline, Metcalf is still twisting his body, reaching up, grabbing a pass out of the air over the top of a really good defender. You know, even the thing that impressed me, I'll be honest, is that he was out and questionable with an oblique strain. Didn't play in the Saturday scrimmage, but then he was right back on Monday or Tuesday, back at it, and then just jumps in and immediately makes plays again. So, you know, the guy's ability to kind of fight through a little injury, the guy, you know, comes out and just stands out. I mean, who else is standing out like that? I mean, it's like day in, day out in practice reports, you're just hearing about Metcalf, and then everybody else kind of fills in the gaps. Well, you know, even a guy like...
part of it is that Metcalf is... He's this, you know, athletic wonder, and everyone is specifically watching him. So that's why there's a lot of comments on him.
Have you heard anything about Gary Jennings?
I haven't.
Or Jerron Brown?
No.
That's supposed to step up? Or David Moore?
I have heard some stuff about Moore, that Moore has actually been battling and doing a lot of stuff in the air and twisting his body and just using his height to beat guys because...
I've heard more about Jazz Ferguson than David Moore.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard some about Jazz Ferguson too, but I have heard stuff about David Moore and John Ursua, and, you know, Tyler Lockett's been out there and been very good. So it's not that the room is completely devoid of talent.
That's true, just, Keith. That is true.
It's just not as interesting as we really wanted it to be, because we wanted Gary Jennings to come out and, showed that he deserved reps, and you wanted, Jerron Brown to show that he was going to be a guy that would give him 40 catches a season, you know, and they haven't done that. They really just haven't.
Yeah. You got to play the games. I mean, yeah, you just have to play. It's just,
the one completely unexpected player that's shown has been Amara Darboh. Draft pick from a couple of years ago, made the team, never did anything, then missed an entire year because of an injury. And it just feels like everything was lost. And, you know, okay, we'll just chalk
that
up.
Well, they cut him last year.
Let's chalk that up to a guy that's not going to turn into anything at this level. And then he's out there saying, no, I'm still here. Don't forget about me. And I think that...
So I got a question for you, Keith. So who was the coach that's out there? He used to be with the Seahawks, runs the Senior Bowl now. Remember? I can't remember the guy's name. But I think he was on Twitter and kind of sent out a text or a tweet this last spring that indicated that there was a player on the Seahawks at one point that they drafted. They were very disappointed in right away because they could immediately tell that he didn't have the talent that that they thought they did, and everyone alluded to the fact that they thought it was Darboh who he was talking about. Did you see that at all at the time?
No, I didn't.
Jim Nagy? I can't remember his name. So, Darboh, you know, from being cut, picked up for the New England Patriots, cut again, Seahawks picked him up. That's a guy we haven't really talked about at all as far as even having a chance in this wide receiver room, because the wide receiver room is really interesting, Keith. You've definitely got Tyler Lockett. You've got Jerron Brown and David Moore. Then you've got Metcalf. And everyone's looking at, like, Gary Jennings like, well, he's a fourth rounder, that you just automatically give a spot to him. But if you do that, you've got guys like Keenan Reynolds and Malik Turner that are right there, not to mention John Ursua, who you really like.
Reynolds,
and then you've got a Darboh and Ferguson. I was like, yeah. So, I mean, they've got like seven or eight guys that are competing for one spot. Gary Jennings, Reynolds, Turner, Ursua, Terry Wright, Amara Darboh, and Ferguson are all in that bubble if they keep five wide receivers. If they keep six, you're going to have, you know, two of those guys show up. But that's going to be an interesting through camp to watch.
And you didn't even mention Caleb Scott, who was a standout in preseason last year. Didn't make the final cut, but really showed that he could play. And he made a couple of acrobatic catches right on the sideline that were on bad throws, where he was still able to get his hands on it, make the catch. And so he's a guy that I've been hoping would kind of stand out a little bit. He hasn't, but we'll see what happens when the games start, because he's a bigger guy.
Well, they cut Caleb Scott, Keith. They cut Caleb Scott like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I don't know. You must have missed it.
I missed it.
So he's no longer on the roster.
So I that's interesting, because I've been watching for him to show up and do things, and I'm just like, I never see him. Like, I see, oh, look, there's Metcalf making another play, and there's Lockett making another play, and there's Brown. No, that was not him. He didn't make that play. And I've been kind of waiting to see if this guy was there, because the team really liked him a year ago. And it's interesting that they cut him. I wonder if there was something that happened, or he'd gotten hurt, or
I'm trying to look at the roster right now to see who they brought in when he got cut. They brought somebody in, and I can't remember who it was now. I'm looking. Yeah, I don't know. So it actually could have been when they brought Shedd in.
They cut Caleb Scott,
I think the same day or the day after, something like that.
That might be. We haven't even talked about Deshaun Shedd at all. I mean, we mentioned him last week. Yay, he's back, but we'll see. Like
You can go days and days between, you know, practice reports where a guy's name pops. You have to kind of go to the practices, or even online. They show just this generic footage. It's really difficult to watch online if you can't make the practice, because they really don't show anything. They don't stick on a particular position group long enough for you to really even pick out names and numbers. You got to kind of be at the practice. Of course, I'm in Scottsdale. You're further south from Seattle, so it's hard for us to kind of get there. So we're depending on these reports. And they come from all over the place, so we have a lot of places we can get information. But sometimes a guy's name just isn't mentioned for quite a while. So, how about we talked about Jazz Ferguson, and I think that he's an interesting player to watch for everyone, because he was a guy that we talked about as an undrafted guy out of this last draft, and he stuck with the Seahawks. He came into camp like really heavy, like at 239 pounds or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's back down into the 225 range for camp. He seems to be making tons and tons of plays. The other guy that popped for me, go ahead.
I was going to say, in the mock game, Ferguson caught two touchdowns at the very end of the game, both a long bomb from Smith that actually hit a defender in the hands. So it wasn't like a great throw, but he caught the ricochet in the end zone for a touchdown. And then Pete Carroll just decided that the team recovered the onside kick. So here's like a minute left and go score. And Smith did bring him down the field and connected with Jazz Ferguson again.
Remind everybody just how big Jazz Ferguson is.
I have to look it up.
He's like six five. He's 6'5" and 225. So he looks like DK Metcalf. He's not as like, you know, built as DK Metcalf, but he's the same height, a little taller, and about the same weight. When he showed up at minicamp in May, he looked like a tight end. I mean, everyone was mm-hmm. like, who's the tight end? And it was this, awkward receiver, because he was so heavy, he couldn't really get out of breaks very well. But he dropped his weight, came in and ready to go, and it looks like he'd be kind of a perfect candidate for the practice squad.
Yeah, he would, especially with, you know, the weight, and if he can't keep it down and that kind of stuff. But he has, since it was just weird in the OTAs. It was like he hadn't really worked out, and that wasn't really the type of guy the team thought they were drafting. But then when training camp started, he came in back in shape and his weight was down and all that. So I think he's kind of maybe learned that lesson, and he's going to do what he needs to do when he's away from the team. I don't know. He's made enough plays. He's going to push for a roster spot.
I know.
He really is.
I know, which is really interesting. Plays. I mean,
I say he makes plays. Now he's not playing. He's not playing against the starters like Metcalf is. Like Metcalf's generally playing and, you know, going up against Griffin and Flowers, whereas Ferguson's usually going up against guys whose names you won't recognize. Because they're both further.
But they're down, the same type of player. They play. They would play in the same role in the in the offense.
And so, but he still makes. He still shows up and makes plays, and you can't. Like you still, you see him. He makes you notice him by playing well in these practices.
So, can you imagine a wide receiver lineup of like Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Jazz Ferguson, Gary Jennings and David Moore or John Ursua and Malik Turner. I mean, there's so many players that have some serious upside in that wide receiver room, Keith. So you mentioned Jazz Ferguson pushing for a spot. I'm just going to ask you, who would get pushed out? I mean, you got Tyler Lockett, Metcalf, Brown, Moore. Those are locks, right? And then you've got Keenan Reynolds, Jennings, Turner. And then you've got Ursua, Darbo, Ferguson. It's like, there's more than one player that's got to lose there. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I mean, what you're going to look at if I think they keep six just because of the inexperience and they want to keep a guy like Jerron Brown around because he's a veteran. And even though he is not the most talented guy out there. And so, I think that the Seahawks will keep him around. But really, I mean, that's why they keep six, is because he's not the guy they want, but he's the guy they think they need. And the guys that they want are going to be, you know, Ursula and Ferguson or Jennings or, you know, these young guys that haven't proven anything.
So the other guy that popped at the scrimmage was Barcavius Mingo. It's like the team dedicated him over to that strong side spot. And rushing the passer, and it seems like he would be a natural fit there, and it turns out he is kind of a natural over there, at least while Ansa is out.
Yeah. So what this was the guy that was the role he was drafted in the top five to fill by Cleveland. Like they thought they were getting an elite speed rusher. Who could come off the edge and get to the quarterback for 10, 12 sacks a game. That's who they thought they were drafting. And he just never had the production. And then, of course, you got to think about how much of that is Cleveland, right? That team was bad. The coaching staff was bad.
You had Seattle put him in the exact same role that he was in Cleveland last year.
Yeah. I mean, not really, because they kind of did, but they also had him in... They had him at strong side linebacker, and he was dropping into coverage and trying to be a off the line of scrimmage linebacker, and it didn't really work. And he ended up kind of working his way out of the lineup, and Calitro became the starter over there for part of the season. And Mingo didn't play as much, but this year what they've done is they've shifted his role. And yes, he's still playing on that side, but they're bringing him up onto the line of scrimmage, or they're moving him to the other side of the formation and actually just lining him up at defensive end. And they're just having him be at the line of scrimmage and either set an edge or rush the passer, and which is more of the role that the Cleveland Browns had him in when he wasn't very good. But he's really showing, he's really popping, and just was dominant at times during the scrimmage with his ability to get around the edge. Just
against Jamarco Jones, by the way.
Yeah, which was not a good look for Jamarco Jones. But, he's still getting his feet wet in the league, because even though he was around last year, he missed the whole year because of injury. So, you know, it's just one of those situations where we'll see what happens. We'll see. Maybe he does develop.
The other guy I wanted to, the other guy I want to talk about is Tedrick Thompson. It's like Tedrick Thompson seems like he's showing up this camp to continue to take starters minutes in that free safety spot, Keith. And I know that you really want to see it, and you want to see it play out, you know, in games, but what do you think so far of Tedrick Thompson, at least at this point, showing up ready to still claim that spot?
I have to be careful what I say because I've been told on Twitter that I bash on Tedrick too much. So I'm going to try and make sure that I keep the tone of this correct. Tedrick has always shown up in practice. In practice, he's an elite player. In games, he's never been. He with the Seahawks, and Pete Carroll talked about it. Said it was confidence and all of that. And I don't know, but I know that he shows up in practice and does things that keep the coaches,
fall in love with.
Yeah. They like him and they're willing to be patient with him because he does things in practice that you're like, wow. But then none of those things show up in games. And eventually last year, the Seahawks got tired of waiting and Lano Hill ended up as the guy of the last couple games getting starts. And then they drafted Blair with the idea that, you know, he's going to be in the mix for that. And then they drafted Amani with the idea that maybe down the road he could he'd develop into that role. And so you've got a lot more competition and all that because the team got tired of waiting. So he's out there making plays and he looks like a starter. He's not just out there because there's no, you know, other people are hurt. And so he's just the guy with the ones who's, cause he's kind of a vet and has the experience. Cause they'll do that. No, he's actually playing well and making plays, but he did that last year too. So what I need to see is him do it in games. He's got to translate what he does well in practice and do it in games. And until he shows that, I'm not going to buy in. I can't. I've been fooled too many times by him.
One last area of concern that I had is the cornerback group. Trey mm-hmm. Flowers seems to be doing well, and then there's everybody else. I've heard that Akeem King is even struggling a little bit in practice. Kalen Reed hasn't really shown up yet. Jamar Taylor actually is a guy that I've heard his name mentioned as far as maybe possibly being in the lead as far as a nickel guy is concerned, or, you know. And then Shaquille Griffin came into camp ready to go, ready to be great, and I haven't heard really good things so far about Griffin back in his spot.
I've heard positive.
Curious as to what you're hearing,
Griffin. Yeah, like I've heard positive and negative. Like there are days when he, the coaches are really impressed with his ability to read what's going on and know what the opposing, what the offense is doing, get upfield, make plays in the run. They liked his tackling. He's saying he's being more aggressive in that. And he's not letting people get behind him with the exception of DK Metcalf, who's like a freaking speed demon. But he hasn't let other guys get behind him. He hasn't always had the best coverage in front of him, but he's not letting guys get behind him, which is that combination.
And that's kind of been his trademark since he was a rookie.
Yeah. He just don't get beat deep. If you're going to give up a catch and make the tackle. But don't get beat deep and, don't give up the big play and hurt your team that way. And he hasn't. And so he's been doing some things that are good. And I think it may not look like people are like, oh, he got beat by Metcalf. Well, you know what? Everybody's been beat by Metcalf. But what is he doing in that play? Were there positives? Or did he just get, did he make a mistake or did he just get out athleted? And I think he got out athleted. And I'm cautiously positive about everything that I've heard about Griffin so far. It hasn't all been, wow, he's come in and just, lit the place up and been great. But it hasn't been the opposite of that either.
So one of the last things I want to talk about, and just briefly about the Seahawks, is that the Seahawks are looking to kind of give Tyler Lockett a little bit of a respite returning kicks. And so they're looking primarily at David Moore, Rashad Penny, and DK Metcalf to return kicks, return punts. Out of that group, who are you most excited to see return kicks for the Seahawks?
I was going to say, J.D. McKissic is listed on the roster as a returner. Like, he's not even listed in the running back room, even though that's what he plays and that's who he's been. But Or maybe that's, maybe they've changed that, but a couple of days ago he was listed as a kick returner. And it's, so it's interesting that his name hasn't been mentioned on that. That particular group, I don't really like the idea of those guys returning punts. At least with punts, my theory and based on what I've seen and whatever is I like a JD McKissic type, a little smaller, a little shiftier, you know, speedster that way. Whereas when it comes to kick returns, you can have the bigger, taller guy like DK Metcalf who can just run because, you know, catches a ball at the goal line. Once he gets up to speed by the 15-yard line, if he has any sort of window to go through, he can be past everybody and where he's got the kicker to beat in 10 steps. And so, and that's what you're looking for, is you're looking for that straight line speed. Whereas with punt returns, you need more agility and the ability to make a couple of guys miss right when you catch the ball. And then you can maybe run it back.
Well, Rashad Penny had 7 return touchdowns in college. So that guy intrigues me. I'd like to see him return punts. A guy like Ugo Amadi, I'm surprised isn't on the list and being considered. As he was mentioned as a guy out of the draft that could possibly be a return guy and has experience returning punts in college. I can't think of anybody else, you know, maybe a guy like Travis Homer could find a home returning some stuff. I don't know of anybody else really that's kind of got that thing, that special spark that, you know, of course, Tyler Lockett, you know, did that in college and was electric. I mean, that's basically why we drafted Tyler Lockett, was to kind of be that return guy for us. And then he ended up being a fantastic receiver. How about the Denver Broncos? So
that was one of the themes in that training camp, was they were like, so we drafted this returner, but like, cow, he can play receiver too. Like that was like this thing that kept coming up. They're like, he's really polished. We did not expect him to be this. We figured it would take him a year or two to break in, but he's going to be good. That was interesting. So, and you know, it's kind of the same idea that we're hearing about DK Metcalf, right? Where they're like, we expected him to be kind of raw and a super athletic and a guy maybe who can run some go routes for us and stretch the defense, but he's way better than we anticipated. Like, he's better at routes. He's more precise. He's, and they're like, that's interesting. So
he's physical. Yeah. Crazy.
And so there is kind of a similarity there, which I think, or I hope, will say what it says is that Metcalf is going to be successful in this league because, obviously if he's following, you know, in the footsteps of Lockett there, you can't go wrong because Lockett's been great.
So the Denver Broncos come to town Thursday night, 7:00. New head coach or new offensive coordinator, Rich Scangillaro, something like that. Head coach Vic Fangio. They've got a new offense. They drafted quarterback in the second round, Drew Locke. Mm-hmm. But Joe Flacco is the guy they picked up in the offseason that's projected to be their guy. In this game, it's the first time the Broncos will see Flacco. They didn't play in the first opener for the Hall of Fame game. So it's a whole new offense. They'll probably get a slow start out of the gate. You can probably expect to see Drew Locke, though, for, you know, quite a bit of that game. Other notable players on the Broncos, you know, Von Miller. So what I want you to do is I want you to listen to these players and then imagine the talks that we had prior to drafts where we were talking about guys. A lot of these guys were like sea hockey guys, which is interesting to me. So not Von Miller, but Noah Fant, tight end, Philip Lindsay, running back, Emmanuel Sanders, wide receiver, Bradley Chubb, linebacker. Love that guy. Royce Freeman, running back, Cortland Sutton, wide receiver, Connor McGovern at guard. We talked a lot about that guy. Garrett Bowles at tackle. Troy Fumagalli at tight end. That was the guy tight end that I really was after as kind of a mid-round kind of guy. Juwan James is the guy they picked up in free agency this year at tackle. He was a former number one pick for Miami to kind of solidify their line. So They come in with some guys. They come in with some names. But they the projections are they're still a middling kind of 8-8 type team. Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting anything out of the preseason. I don't really care who we face or whatever, but I just thought I'd kind of give everybody a little heads up on the opponent that we're gonna look at. So
yeah, I mean,
anything else, Keith?
I was gonna say, to me, looking at the Broncos roster, this is like if I had done the draft, a lot of those names would be on the Seahawks because Connor McGovern and Trevor Noah and Noah Fant. You go down the list. I'm like, these are guys that I really liked before they were drafted. And I really hope the Seahawks would go get them, and they didn't. They drafted someone else and the Broncos got them. And then there's all the other half of the roster are people that I'm like, they're still in the league. Like, really?
Yeah.
And that's why this team is going to be, middling. Like, Joe Flacco has not been good for a couple of years. And, you know, he got replaced last year. And now they're expecting him to be a bridge to second-rounder Drew Locke.
But yes, that's Flacco's, correct. That's
Flacco's,
right.
Flacco's not going to be good. And Locke isn't ready. And so what do you do with that? So
their offense is going to suck.
Yeah. Yeah. But Philip Lindsay is amazing. So yes. he's going to create some openings that maybe the quarterbacks can do something with, but it's not a great situation for them and their offense. I see they're a year away. They really need to get Locke some playing time, know what they've got in him, get him some reps so that way he can take that leap next year after having some starts under his belt, but they don't want to throw him out there because they know he's not close. So they're going to throw out Flacco, who's going to be mediocre. And that's all they've got.
So name what are the two main things you want to see out of the offense in this game? Knowing that Wilson's out.
Yeah. Oh, I want to see them string together some first downs, move the sticks with some passes to the running backs and tight ends, make a play action and go deep. Go for the big play, even if you don't hit it, because I just think I want that to be their offense this year. They've said that's what the offense is going to be, but I want them to actually do it. And I want to see Geno Smith show some consistency. He doesn't have to be a star. He doesn't have to run up the score or look like Russell Wilson. He's just got to be steady, and I want to see him be steady.
And no turnovers.
Yeah. Obviously.
I'm interested just to see if there's any hints on the rumors I've been hearing about kind of a little differences in the offensive game. So I want to see how the tight ends are used. I heard they're doing some crossing routes instead of these little outs and so forth, seam routes. So I want to see if that is emerging at all, although the tight end room is decimated right now. Mm-hmm. And then I want to see if the running backs are used out wide a little bit to kind of throw those quick outs to running backs in open space. I want to just see if that is part of any type of play calling at all. And if they show anything as far as changing it up a little bit, as far as run, run, pass, I want to see if they do a little bit pass to set up the run type of a thing.
They better not be doing run, run, pass every series, because that it was terrible and didn't work, and it was very frustrating to watch. And they need more creativity. They don't necessarily need the ratio to change that much, but they need to not be so predictable.
How about on defense, Keith?
On defense, I really want to see what the defensive line can do. I know they're missing a couple of their stars in like Ansa, and I don't think Jerron Reed's going to play, even though he's been practicing and stuff. So I want to see the other guys. I want to see Puna Ford dominate in the middle. Especially against the run and just being able to eat blocks and keep the linebackers clean when Philip Lindsay's going. I want to see the linebackers that are playing be able to make those reads and get up and make plays in the hole rather than 5 yards downfield. And I really want to see our cornerbacks cover, not just the two starters, but everybody else. And we'll, you know, there's always that question with Tedrick. Does he show up in this game and look like the guy he is in practice? Or does he look like the guy from last year? I really hope.
Do you think there'll be any? Do you think they'll reveal any sort of scheme type changes over last year, where they have three safeties on the field, or two linebackers, or will they keep three linebackers out there more? Will we see anything like that, or is it just too early?
I think it's too early. I mean, we might see some of that, but it's more of a. They're doing things that they want to see how players react. Oh, guess what, linebacker? Now we're going to put you in coverage out here. How do you react to it? Do you get your depth like when you need to, or do you make the right read? And so they're going to do some stuff like that to put guys in situations so they can see how they react and whether or not they've been paying attention and learning and stuff. And so, but I don't think it's indicative of a scheme change or anything like that. It's too early for that. They don't want to give away tendencies, and they don't have all their players, because remember, they would scheme those things to their player's strength. Well, when you don't have Ansa and Bobby Wagner and Kendricks and a bunch of guys, what are you going to do, right? So I don't think they're going to be doing those things entirely scheme dependent. It's more just going to be player evaluation.
I'd love to see Shaquem Griffin have a good game, because I think his roster spot depends on it. I mean, he needs to have a playmaking type game. I think that's it. I mean, I'm expecting total vanilla play calling, and I'm expecting vanilla production and a kind of vanilla game in general, because so many guys are out, and it really doesn't mean anything. And Russell Wilson's not going to be out there, so it's just almost a throwaway game. But it is kind of nice for football to start again. This is kind of the official kickoff of 2019, the 2019 season, the first preseason game. It's a home game. Everyone's kind of excited to get back into it, so it'll be fun to watch. And then next week we'll just get back to it. Keith, we'll come back. We'll review the game a little bit. We'll review what's new in training camp, and we'll preview the next game, which is the Minnesota Vikings at Minnesota in their fairly new, year-old stadium. So that'll be an interesting watch. That game will be a little bit more interesting to me, because it seems like we're going to get a bunch of guys back, and including Russell Wilson, and it would be much more of an interesting watch. But the first game is the first game, and so it'll be fun.
Yeah, enjoy watching practice tonight. I mean, preseason.
That's funny. So until next time, follow Keith on Twitter at MyersNFL. I'm at NW Seahawk, Northwest Seahawk. This show is at Hawks Playbook, and HawksPlaybook.com has all the shows. iTunes, subscribe, Google Podcasts, or any other podcast app. With the subscription, you don't miss anything. You get them out onto your phone listening device as soon as they're published. So until next time, Keith, go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Hey, Hawks fans. Thanks for listening to the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio, and listen to all of our shows on HawksPlaybook.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at Hawks Playbook. Bill is at NW Seahawk, and Keith is at Myers NFL.